podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Am I meant to say good luck or something?
The Fantasy Football Show.
Hello, everybody. My name's James. Welcome to another Planet FPL Clash of the Correspondents. And we are looking forward ahead to Saturday's big North London derby. Firstly, no booing at the back, please. Let me introduce you to our Arsenal correspondent, Adam Pritchard. How are you, Adam?
I'm doing very well, thank you, James.
Good man. And cheering at the back, please, everyone. It's our Tottenham correspondent, Ricky Saunders. How are you, Ricky?
Very well, thank you, mate. Very well. Yourself?
Yes, grand. Not enjoying this week, because I never do. Which is a nice starting point, because we did this podcast 18 months ago. And there's a link in the bio if you want to listen back to that 18 months ago, because we talked a lot then about the rivalry between the two clubs, how it's evolved in the 21st century. But the vibe now, I think, is very different to then on pitch as well, because we were all pretty depressed at that point. Ricky, we were a week away from losing this derby and getting bullied in Croatia by Dynamo Zagreb. We didn't think it could get worse, but it did. And Adam, Arsenal weren't in a great point either at that period under Mikel Arteta. What's changed since then? Why are you now in such a strong position?
I think first off, it's kind of unavoidable to discuss how much better the squad is now, I think. Although back then, certainly at the start of Arteta's tenure, Aubameyang was firing in sort of red hot form. Obviously, that tailed off quite drastically towards the end. But now I think we have a much more complete squad. We always had depth before, but that depth was Cedric and kind of that level of player. But now the depth that we have is we've kind of got Kieran Tierney backing up Zinchenko at left back. We've got Ben White and Tomiyasu fighting out over the right back spot. We've got a kind of a revitalized Eddie Nketiah being kept on the bench by Gabriel Jesus. And we've got Granit Xhaka no longer kind of playing. I can't even imagine what I would have said about him 18 months ago. I dread to think.
Turned like a forklift truck, I think was the words you'd used in the past, Adam.
Yeah, I mean, probably. And he's obviously drastically improved since then as well. So I think the quality of squad we have now is much better. And that is kind of helped inform the fact that the quality of football that we're playing now is much more progressive and aligned to the kind of values that Arteta has stated he wants to sort of maintain on the pitch right from the outset.
When was the last time Arsenal fans were this happy?
Probably 2014 FA Cup win, maybe. The first one after the kind of drought when it was... I think a lot of us viewed that then as like our Wenger's sort of ended the kind of trophy drought that we had. We can kind of send him off with a kind of fond farewell kind of thing, which obviously isn't what ended up happening. But I think that end of the season trophy win really left the fans on quite a high.
And the squad depth, who's responsible for making that better? Is that Arteta or is that from the top of the club?
I think Arteta is inextricably linked from the top of the club at this point. Although we kind of, post-Wenger wanted to move away from the idea that the manager had such an influence over the transfers and the composition of the playing squad and all that kind of stuff. Arteta has kind of exerted his influence more and more on that club hierarchy. And I think it can't, for all the kind of talk, a lot of it rightful around kind of the issues with the Kroenke ownership, which obviously there is a lot of issues that we probably don't have time to go into. They have certainly backed Arteta in the transfer market. When he's really wanted a player, they've been willing to kind of give him the funds to go and get that player. And they've also been willing to, which is probably the harder thing for a lot of football clubs, to kind of cut their losses at a certain stage and pay players effectively to leave the club and forsake quite a lot of quite a lot of value in that case. So I think the hierarchy has certainly been willing to back Arteta, and I think that's a huge, huge factor in that.
Just reflecting on that pod 18 months ago, the month afterwards, obviously our two clubs decided to try and break away and form part of a European Super League. That was then at its lowest ebb, wasn't it, Adam, in terms of the relationship between fans and ownership? It feels... Is it just that you're winning football matches at the moment, so it's quiet? Like, what is the situation from fans to owners? What's the feeling now?
That's always the way, isn't it?
Yeah.
A lot of 99% of fans only really care about what's going on the pitch. And that sounds harsh to say, but at the end of the day, that's sort of how football works. You don't really pay attention to the other stuff if you're winning. And when you're not winning, everything that is bad about your club suddenly comes front of mind and it's all you can think about. I don't think the relationship is improved a huge amount. I think there's still a lot of distrust around the crunky ownership. Like, I know there's a lot of kind of loans being taken out under the name of the club, and there's no transparency over the terms of kind of repayments for some of those loans. And I think there's a certain amount of lip service that's being done to Arsenal fans, like Josh Kroenke, who's effectively running the club on his father Stan's behalf. He's a very good talker, he kind of looks and speaks like a character from Succession, if anyone's seen that TV show. He's a very slimy, kind of distrustful corporate American vibe about him. But he is, I suppose, at least talking, which obviously the huge criticism over Stan Kroenke when he was kind of the figurehead of the Kroenke Sports Foundation was the silent Stan moniker that he was dubbed with, because he just never came out and said anything. So I think they're certainly making an effort to be more transparent and more communicative in the wake of the Super League thing, which they have admitted was a mistake, which I suppose you have to credit them with some kind of something for realising that.
The biggest mistake was certainly Daniel Levy's biggest mistake, wasn't it, Ricky? Yeah. Or was that a point in Mourinho? I can't work out in hindsight. What's changed at Tottenham in the last 18 months? There's the obvious with the manager.
Yeah, I think the easy question to answer, James, would be what hasn't changed. We got rid of the manager, we got Paratici, then we got another manager, got rid of that manager. But it's the club now seems to have more of a we always had I felt we had a direction, but now we've got someone that isn't called Daniel Levy kind of steering us in that direction. And Paratici, I think, has been the major difference. He's the one that was responsible for, or partly responsible at least, for bringing in Conte. He's got rid of a lot of the players that for years we've said we wanted to get rid of, you know, causing bad feeling around the club or not performing or not looking like they were going to perform. He's had a big hand in bringing in players, especially the likes of Bentancourt and Deki, who, as the song goes, he's the reason that we're where we are at the moment.
Oh, I like that's not how the song goes.
I don't know if Adam's heard that one, but he'll certainly hear it on Saturday.
You will, yeah.
Yeah. I think the big change is Paratici. He's steadied the ship. These players that were seemingly unhappy are now happy. Potentially new contracts coming as well. In Conte, we've got a brand of football that, although it's not nice to watch at times when you're being battered on your own turf for 45 minutes and can't get hold of the ball, but it's winning football with the players have all got a good understanding, which they didn't have 18 months ago. It's like 11 individuals on the pitch. It's now a team, and that is that's testament to the work that Conte has put in, and say Paratici in the background, and fair play to Daniel Levy as well, in all honesty, because he's let someone loose with his baby and he's trusted them to do it. So I think it's a lot of it has been a mind shift from Daniel Levy as well, letting someone else take over the reins of certain parts of the club.
Are you happy with Conte? That might sound like a ridiculous question on the outside.
No, it doesn't. If you watch as many games as we watch, it doesn't sound like a ridiculous question. Yeah, I'm happy with him. He's a world-class manager, world-class coach. The players clearly love him. We're getting the results. I'm not always happy with the football. I don't know why, with the players that we've got, we always have to be the ones sitting back and letting teams come on to us. Why not grab the game by the scruff of the neck ourselves and go and attack it? And instead of, you know, clinging on in the first half and then winning it in the second half, why not go and win it in the first half? And we're playing a dangerous game, and sooner or later we are going to get maybe a little bit embarrassed by a team. I mean, last year, but for quite a few years, we've always struggled to break down stubborn teams, the likes of Burnley and teams like that. And there's going to be games this season, if we keep on going the way we are, that we're going to invite teams to come on to us. They're going to nick one. They're going to shut up shop and we won't break them down. And we'll lose some games 1-0 this year purely because we've let them have the ball when we should be the ones attacking it. So I don't want to moan about Conte. I'd be a fool too. But I just wish that we'd maybe attack a game a bit more. Maybe start with a three in midfield as opposed to a two.
Wouldn't that make Tottenham even more defensive?
I don't want us to be defensive, but just control the ball. We're not controlling it. We'll clear it from defence, and it's going straight to an opposition player, and then we're on the back foot again. Just get hold of the ball in midfield, or you know, with the centre backs, and just keep it. But unless the front three are gonna drop back, and Kane normally does, but we don't have many options to pass out from the back because you only got two in midfield.
Yeah, no, that's all fair. I think the control of games annoys me as well. I'd also like to say at this stage that watching Antonio Conte football compared to the previous manager is like watching 1982 Brazil, to be totally honest. So I'm not that unhappy with the quality of football that I'm watching at the moment.
No,
in comparison, but certainly I agree. In unlike the other teams at the top of the table challenging for top four, we don't have control of football matches.
No, we don't, and that is we don't seem to get started until the second half. Maybe that's a fitness thing. Maybe it's Conte needs to reiterate his tactics at half time. Maybe it's that the other team has run out of ideas a little bit. I don't know. But we are managing to stretch games when there's tired legs and our fitness does show through that. But Jesus, just go and attack in the first half. you could almost turn up to the game at half time knowing you haven't missed anything.
Okay, Adam, how do you feel about Tottenham at the moment? I don't mean like emotionally. I know you hate the rival and stuff. I mean, how do you feel about Tottenham as a football team at the moment?
Yeah, I think the pre-season narrative around Tottenham might have kind of coloured my current perception of them, because I think there was a lot of talk, and how much of it was kind of fanciful and in jest, I don't really know. But Tottenham being, if not challenging for the league, and I know you, James, kind of laughed that off a little bit, maybe being very close to second place. And I've watched them this season, regrettably. I think probably every game they've been televised, and I've not been hugely impressed. I think it's safe to say that. I think you're giving up, like you guys have both said, a lot of possession. You're sitting back a lot, but you're giving away a lot of chances. And I realise that
not totally true.
Well, I suppose perhaps you're giving away a lot of attacking possession to the opponents.
True.
Rather than chances. Yeah, you're right. You're right to correct me there. And that is part of kind of how Conte works. He doesn't necessarily give away a lot of chances and gives away even fewer good chances to the opponents, but he does allow them to have a lot of kind of possession in that attacking third. And I don't know how sustainable that is over the course of the season. So I kind of look at Tottenham wanting to be sceptical, but also recognising that the reasons I'm sceptical of Tottenham's kind of ability to challenge those top two, a lot of those reasons are kind of part of Conte's game plan, if that makes sense. It's kind of what he does. And he's proven more often than not that what he does gets very, very good results.
Ricky, that same question, but obviously in reference to Arsenal. How do you feel about them?
Regressively, they look good. They look very good. I was obviously, as you do every year, you kind of hope it falls apart completely. And but no, the players seem to be responding to Arteta. They've made some good signings. Some decent players have come in. I think with Arsenal, it was just as much of getting rid of some bad eggs as well. They really kicked on after the likes of Aubameyang left the squad last year. So yeah, they've done a lot of good work behind the scenes, players in, players out, and yeah, Arsenal look really good. Look like a really, really decent side. I didn't see any way that they were going to make top four this year, but they're firmly in it. I'd, at the minute, I'd be surprised if they didn't make it.
Where do you think they'll finish, Ricky?
Fourth, I reckon they'll get fourth.
Adam, where do you think Tottenham will finish?
A lot of it depends on the European run. I suppose Antonio Conte's record in that probably isn't so good. So I assume he'll get knocked out relatively early there. Assume and hope.
Having watched us in Lisbon, we're trying.
Yeah, I was going to say.
We're doing all we can.
I'd say fourth, probably.
Okay, so we both think of each other top four. And I take it, Adam, at the moment, you're now confident Arsenal will finish top four.
Yeah. I think at this point to say I don't think Arsenal can finish top four would just kind of be denying.
No, obviously you can. Do you think?
Yeah, I don't think. I think, obviously, Chelsea change of manager, there's a little bit of an unknown about them. I think they'll take time to kind of adapt to how Potter wants to play. I think we've all seen what's going on at Liverpool. City are City, they're going to win the league. And yeah, Man United, I'm not hugely convinced about either just yet. So yeah, I think we can finish.
So you're ruling yourself out at the top?
Yeah, yes. I'm pretty sorry to break that news to you. Yes, I don't think we'll be winning the title.
Don't be sorry. I'm pleased to hear it. Don't have to apologise. But why does City take the right off the ball?
But they're
You're
City,
above
are
them.
They,
You're
but
above them. City. You're top of the league, mate.
We are. But they're City. The occasions they take their time, their eye off the ball are so rare that it's only really knockout football where it kind of comes back to bite them. We've seen in league football, they're just so, yeah, they're so relentless. It's like attrition with them. They just wear the entire league down with their consistency.
Do you think Arsenal are capable of getting to 90 points?
No. My highest level of optimism would be that we finish above Liverpool in second, which I don't think will happen.
Okay, Ricky, Tottenham win the league or not, mate?
No, I was really quite clear on this at the start of the season when we did our correspondent podcast. No, we're not going to win the league. I mean, Adam alluded to all the media speculation about Tottenham at the start of the season. I wasn't getting suckered into it. Yeah, we looked good. We looked a lot better, but no. City, as Adam said, they're just a different level and they've got levels as well to go. Their second string team would finish in the top three of the Premier League. We're not winning any leagues.
Okay, fine. Adam, Granit Xhaka, you did mention briefly his role at the moment. How important is that to Arsenal? And what happens at the weekend if Thomas Partey is not available? We have heard rumours that he pulled out of Ghana's match yesterday with a potential knee injury.
Yeah, so I think Partey being injured, I think that was more of a precaution than anything concrete, at least from what I've seen. I think it was the club saying to the national team, don't risk him and kind of bringing him back just to assess him. If he is out, I imagine what will happen is we'll see the same thing that happened at Old Trafford, hopefully not in result, but that Lokonga will step in and deputise there, which is a big kind of change in the player profile. I think Lokonga is quite good at bringing the ball forward. So he's quite good in the kind of front-footed aspect of what we need from that pivoted midfielder in the central three. He is not so good at that kind of disruptive play, and he's less of an anchor in the middle than I think we need. And on Granit Xhaka, his role change is something I don't think anyone really thought was possible, to be honest. I think this, probably from this calendar year, I think he's been very consistent, which is not really words I would have associated with him previously, where he was quite erratic in his level of performance, but also in his style of performance. He would fly into challenges kind of very recklessly. You wouldn't really be able to trust him with any sort of level of kind of tempo dictation, if that makes sense. Whereas now he's taking much more of a proactive role in leading the team in how we want to play, rather than this kind of rhetorical leadership, which he has always always claimed to have had.
And Jesus, how much of an impact is he having at the moment in terms of bringing others into play and his work in himself in front of goal?
Yeah, I think it's kind of difficult to like exactly say how impressed I've been with him. And I think I tried to kind of talk about it a little bit on the podcast before the United game. But I think if it weren't for how that kind of next level Haaland is, I think Jesus would be getting a lot more praise for how well-rounded his game is. And like I said, I think before the United match, it's not just the technical ability and the kind of link-up play, which I think we all kind of knew he was capable of. It's the physicality that he's brought, both in his ability to hold off opponents and also his energy is just unbelievable. I think he's such a well-rounded player that I'm struggling to think of as well-rounded a forward that Arsenal have had sort of in the past decade or so, really.
Ricky, if Conte did decide to go 3-5-2 at the weekend, how do you feel?
Yeah, I'd be really happy with that, in all honesty.
And the three being Bissouma obviously coming in the team to partner the other two in midfield. Yep. Who would play up front?
Well, that's it's got to be Harry, and based on the last performance, you could have Sonny coming off the bench, couldn't you? But I think Sonny's got a bit of confidence now. He scored another beautiful free kick for South Korea.
Welcome back to us.
He scored another beautiful free kick, so he's obviously his confidence is high. So yeah, regrettably drop Deki to the bench and Salah Kane up front.
So here we were prior to Leicester discussing can't play about Kulusevski, this is ridiculous, and we're already one game on and he's not played badly, and already saying maybe change the system. Do you think it's something Conte might do?
I think he might do it. It worked. It certainly, well, let's say it worked. No, I mean, Leicester weren't the greatest opposition in the world. Let's make that right. And they gave us plenty of chances and plenty of possession ourselves. But it did work. It has worked in the past. We've got the personnel on the bench to actually change things up. So we can swap, even with the players on the pitch, in all honesty, we can swap that quite easily to 3-4-3. We can, one substitution, we can change the whole dynamic of the team if it's not working.
Who would play at left wing back for you?
Well, that is a bit of a question. It didn't really work last week against Leicester. I thought with Perisic.
Didn't work?
I didn't.
That's one hell of an understatement, mate.
Yeah. But I think that Sessegnon has proved he's got to play. He hasn't put a foot wrong all season. So if we've got to play Sess, maybe give Perisic a little rest, which I don't do lightly, but then you've got Deki that can play over on the left. And that's a way of getting Deki in the side as well.
So what, you play Deki at right wing back?
Yeah, why not?
If it was free in midfield?
Yeah, if we're three in midfield, yeah. No, if we're two in midfield, then Becky plays up front.
All right, let's work on what Tottenham traditionally do is three up front. Let's say Kulusevski, Kane, Son is probably the likely front three. Yeah. In that case, you're saying that for Arsenal specifically, you'd pick Sessegnon.
I probably would. This doesn't put anything wrong.
Okay, interesting. On the right hand side?
Well, it's got to be Emerson, really, hasn't it?
By default or what?
Yeah, by default.
Why by default?
Because Jed Spence clearly is not favoured. Well, maybe not favoured, maybe not ready, whatever, but he's not going to be starting the North London Derby. That is absolutely for certain. Doherty has got no game time in his legs, or very, very little, very, very, very few minutes. A game of this magnitude, you need players that are at it from the very first whistle. And by default, that is Emerson. Because he's the better defender, that kind of probably makes that one obvious as well. We are going to be under pressure during that game, and he is the best defender by a long way.
As much as offensively, it would be better with Doherty in the team. I don't argue. The thought of Doherty defending Martinelli gives me heart attacks, man. I would have no doubt that Emerson Royal will play at Arsenal, assuming he's obviously fit and stuff. I think the left side, I'm not sure which way it'll go for Arsenal. I still feel Perisic is definitely first choice.
I do.
But I wonder if for Arsenal, you might put the handbrake on it a little bit.
Well, if he's going to put the handbrake on it, he could, even if he's ready, and I don't think he is, play Davis there and then three centre-backs.
Well, he obviously played three centre-backs, Rick.
The three other centre-backs.
You're talking about playing Davis at wing-back, and I don't think you'd do that. I'd be very, very surprised. I think Davis or Longley, we don't really know where we stand in terms of first choice at the moment.
I think Davis is injured anyway at the moment. I don't think he's recovered.
We also are aware of a doubt about Hugo Lloris as well. Would that worry you if he's not playing?
Hell yeah.
Adam, the stand-in tends to play quite well against you.
Who's the stand-in?
Fraser Forster.
Oh, God.
Yeah, look at that reaction, see?
All right, okay, Hugo, stay home that day.
No, we want Hugo in goal.
Yeah, I would be concerned if Hugo wasn't there.
Yes, agreed.
But I do remember a game for Southampton last year where I think everyone threw everything at Fraser Forster and he didn't do too badly, did he?
No, true. Adam, what Arsenal players in your FPL team at the moment?
One on wildcard at the moment. So kind of fluctuating a few in and out. I suppose the notable thing would be is that I've taken Jesus out, and anyone remembers the fact that I started the season without him should probably ignore my advice then and kind of keep him in.
But to be honest, people just, you know, that plus 15 button, people just smashing it now. Yeah, until you stop speaking.
Yeah, no, that's true. I've got Martinelli, and I'm probably going to have one more player in my kind of final draft. I haven't worked out whether it's going to be a defender or kind of tempted to go with Ødegaard a little bit. I haven't kind of worked out that second.
Is he definitely fit for the derby, or is he doubt as well still?
No, he played over the international break.
Okay, fine. He's definitely fit, unfortunately. Yeah. Shame. it's I wish no ill harm to anyone. Does that mean you're going quite light on Man City then, Adam?
I think I'll end up with, well, obviously kind of Son's performance against Leicester, rightly or wrongly, catapulted him back onto kind of everyone's radar from an FPL perspective. So I think I'll go with him in midfield instead of KDB, which was the kind of other option I was toying with. So yeah, Haaland obviously, and then probably Cancelo or Diaz in defence.
Okay, so you're potentially starting with four.
Yeah.
Between Arsenal, City, obviously play each other in 12 and blank. Is there a plan if that's the way you go?
Yeah, I think I'll kind of sort of have a look at the lay of the land when it comes around to that. And I mean, going with 10 for 1 week isn't the worst thing in the world. Or alternatively, I'll swap out one of the defenders for a week. I'm kind of perfectly happy to do that.
Okay. Ricky, what Arsenal players you got?
Arsenal players, Well, I'm also a wild card, so this is all subject to change, but currently one. I've got Martinelli at the moment.
Is it just with him, is it a case of value too good?
Yeah, it's simple as that. What else am I going to get for 6.3, which I've got him at?
No, but the fixtures are difficult, Adam. I think it's fair to say, isn't it? Tottenham home, Liverpool home, Leeds away, blank. He's not, on the face of it, a great run, agreed, for particularly if you bought at six. What can you expect to get for better? I completely agree with that. But do we expect anything over these games, Adam?
I think Leeds there's a pretty good chance of a return there. And he always does very, very well in a one-on-one battle against Alexander-Arnold. So I don't, although the Liverpool game is one as a whole, I'd come to with sort of a lot of trepidation. I don't think isolating Martinelli and looking at him, I don't think it's one I necessarily see him as like hugely struggling in from that perspective. And I think we've kind of discussed the way that Tottenham set up today. I think there's a fair amount of chance he'll get a lot of time in the attacking third on the ball. And he's a great player. So, yeah, I'm not hugely worried.
Yeah, I can't argue that. I think Martinelli comes down to personal preference, what people want to do because of this fixture stretch. I don't think anybody's selling him is not selling him because they think he's shit. Definitely not. The value is incredible. It's just, do you want to get against the fixtures? And I guess punting against the ownership a little bit. If you were going defensive, Adam, and I had to pin you for a name now, who would it be?
Probably Saliba, I would say. I think I said he was probably the one player I could see breaking into the starting lineup pre-season, and he's done that to great effect. And probably represents the best value as we've seen his kind of threat from set pieces against Brentford.
Yeah, up to 4.9. I think it's got scope to keep going, obviously, from starting price 4.5. Highest scoring defender in FPL at the moment. Yes, even more than the likes of Trent. Would you, Adam, if you get him in, do you start him for these fixtures like Tottenham and Liverpool?
I think it's sort of, as a whole, depends on what you've got in the rest of your squad. When you've got kind of relatively cheap options, sort of like, you've got Neco Williams and Andreas, who I think a lot of people will have one of or both of on their bench. If the fixtures work, you can always start them there. I think the Liverpool game, I probably wouldn't start any Arsenal defenders. But the Tottenham game, I could see us getting a clean sheet, so why not?
Oh, well, I have a word. Ricky, what Tottenham players on this wild card then?
Currently just Perisic.
Not Son?
No.
But not Kane?
No, not at the moment. I do have KDB, though, and like Adam, I am not convinced he's going to be there come Friday. That he could well be Son. Well, more than likely be Son, I think.
Big game Sonny, yeah. Rather than big game Kev. Harry Kane, is that structure-wise doesn't work for you? Or?
Yeah, I've got Haaland. I've got at the minute Isak that may have to go if he remains injured, and Mitrovic. So I would have to find a lot of money to get rid of one of them for Kane, and I don't really want to deplete the rest of the team too much.
Isak, we think, Stephanie up, by the way, mate. Couple of weeks ruled out.
Right, well, he will be going as well then.
Don't tell Suj anyone, will you, please?
No. I might have to look at the Solanke then. God, I'll keep hearing that name. I'm not convinced by that at all, but that's a different podcast, so...
Solanke is the enabler to buy Wilfred Zaha or Reece James. It's not the buying Solanke, I think.
Yeah.
Perisic, you said you probably wouldn't start this weekend, but he's in.
Well, Perisic is more than likely going as well. I mean, obviously, we see him more than most. We know how good he is. But yes. If I looked at his stats, would I sign that player for $5.5 million? Absolutely not. Nothing in his stats says to me that I need him in my side, and I think this is an occasion where I am letting the eye test rule my head more than anything else.
The only thing that rules my head on him is I don't know if he's going to play or not from one week to the next, and I think, like, to look at it down the line because of the Champions League games, So, you know, you look at the 8 league games coming up, and to even guess how many Perisic starts, 5, 6, I literally no idea on which ones wouldn't he play. It might be Everton home and Bournemouth away. And then you think, well, hang on, what have I bought here? If that's the way it goes, for example. So, Adam, what Tottenham are you looking at? You're saying Sun?
Yeah, just Sun at the moment. I don't know if I'll go with the defender. I think I had Dier in just because it looked like he would price rise. I can't see myself sticking with him. So, yeah, I think probably just Sun.
Okay, cool. Just before we finish up, guys, Adam, I know you was at the Ladies North London Derby at the weekend. I know you might have a quick word about it. The floor is yours.
Yeah, no, I think it's... first of all, it was the record-breaking in terms of ticket sales, I think, for a WSL game. I think it was over 53,000. And on the day, I think over 47,000 turned up. And I know there's a lot of interest around sort of women's football after, obviously, the Lionesses and their amazing success in the Euros. And I think it was just a really great occasion to be a part of. Obviously, aside from the amazing performance the Arsenal women put in on the pitch, I know a lot of people might have had their kind of eye turned towards women's football after the Euros in the summer. And so, yeah, I just encourage people wherever they can to go down to a women's game, because the atmosphere is, it's so much more kind of energetically joyous than any kind of men's football I've been to. And I think that makes, it's kind of a lot of what you hear about women's football, but being able to experience it in a kind of massive stadium for the first time myself, it was a really, really great occasion. And yeah, Arsenal women, I think top of the WSL, a comprehensive 4-0
All right, victory. Stop. You've done your nice speech about women's football.
You said, and me and Ricky floor, completely so
agree. But it's, we lost 4-0. I don't really know what to say.
Yeah, no. If anyone watches the WSL, you'll probably know that Arsenal women probably have the kind of most in-form front line in the league at the moment. So, yeah, it's really nice to see that kind of dovetailing across the men's and women's side. But, yeah, overall, I just highly recommend anyone who has the kind of ability to go to a women's game to go down and watch them and carry on that support.
Will you, when the rematch is on, will you come to White Hart Lane, mate?
If I can get tickets for it, yeah, sure.
Oh, hello. Should we see him down there, Ricky?
Well, we will see him down there, yeah.
Me and Ricky will be in your way end, hopefully, at the weekend. Don't say hello to us.
Don't point us out in a crowd.
Yeah, just completely ignore us. No, well said, Adam. I think you're right. I think it's obviously a huge growth for the women's game following the summer. And to be fair, our women's team, Ricky, has improved massively from where it was at a few years ago and continues to make strides. Yeah. It's just a little way behind Arsenal still at the moment.
What, we finished fourth or fifth last year?
We did all right.
It's come from nowhere, but yeah, look, we're a long way from challenging the likes of Arsenal, City and Chelsea. They've got the women's game sewn up in this country at the moment.
I think that's for a change in judging by some of the results we've seen so far. Right, men's prediction, correct score for Saturday, please, Adam.
I was hoping you'd go to Ricky first.
You're at home, so...
Probably not going to see the same scoreline that we saw in the women's match. I would...
3-1. Tell you what, I won't be at the end if it is. Be long gone.
No, fair enough.
Be in the ground, I'll be on the tube.
I'll go 3-1 Arsenal.
Oh, he's confident, Ricky. Go on.
He is confident, isn't he?
Yeah, he's not normally. I'm worried. No.
Well, I was going to say 2-2, but I feel like I've got to go for a Tottenham win now.
Oh, my God. This is very surreal, guys. You both fought your sets for the derby predictions.
I'm gonna be realistic. 2-2. I think there's some goals in that game. And if we can get away with a draw, I'll be happy.
Yeah, you basically take the words out of my mouth. Give me that draw now and I'll take it. I'll snatch your hand off. I go 2-1 Arsenal. I just think, to be totally honest, I think you're playing very well at the moment, Adam, and I don't particularly think we are. What I would say as a caveat, though, is our performances in big games suggest we're in a far better position to win these than what we have been in the past. drawn at Anfield this year, drawn at Stamford Bridge this year, won at Etihad this year. So we know that irrespective of where we're at form-wise, we can turn it on in these games on the day if we find the right space on the counter-attack. But I think you're playing very well at the moment, Adam, and are quite rightly favourites.
Yeah, no, I think also we kind of, after the United game, and even though the performance was one where I think we were the better side, the result obviously lends to the kind of easy start narrative that you hear a lot around Arsenal. So I think we do kind of need to win to kind of put that to bed.
Am I meant to say good luck or something? All right, let's just end this podcast. Thanks so much, guys. Adam, where can everyone follow you on the Bird app?
It's my handle is at 35who, spelled out in letters, not numbers.
Good man. And Ricky?
Ricky Saunders, 77.
Perfect. Serge, we'll return tomorrow and we're going to be discussing England's likely World Cup squad, hopefully after maybe a more positive result tonight, but let's see. Next week's Clash of Correspondents should return to Thursday, and it's Crystal Palace versus Leeds with Miktavius and Andy Martin. Just leaves me to say thank you again to Adam and to Ricky. Say it, please, mate.
Come on, Tottenham.
Game Spurs. Cue music, please, man child. Sports Social Podcast Network.